Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty live in the Morton studio. Today in the show, we're going to focus on SDS or sudden death syndrome in soybeans. Hopefully you don't have that disease. Hopefully you never will get it. But if you've had it, if you're worried about it, we've got the answers for you today on what you can do to reduce the incidence of SDS. I don't know if you'll ever completely solve the problem unless, of course, you don't raise soybeans. As always, too, we are happy to take your phone call and discuss anything going on in your farm or answer your questions. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or you can send me a note on Twitter, agphdmedia, or Brian Hefty. Well, I've got my brother Darren out in the field again today. He's out busy looking at seed breeder plots and trying to learn more about genetics and traits and everything. He spends a tremendous amount of time doing that, and it's an incredible asset for us here at Ag PhD just to have a lot of insight into what's here today, but also what's coming in the future. And one of the great things when we look at seed genetics, they're getting a lot better. The seed traits, obviously, you know what a lot of those are, and there are more coming out all the time. There's just so much potential that we have as farmers to gain more yield, and even on something like sudden death syndrome. So when we talk about that, you know, 10 years ago, I don't think I'd ever even heard of sudden death syndrome. I know I hadn't personally worked with anybody that had sudden death syndrome 10 years ago. Well, today, in some of these areas, it's a really bad disease, and it is something that people are incredibly concerned about, and it's forced some guys to rotate away from soybeans. So when you start thinking about that, you go, wow, that's a big change in 10 years. We have this disease that just shows up, we've never seen before, and all of a sudden it's the worst thing we have to face, and it forces me to not even raise that crop anymore. That's a big deal. That's probably something that I need to learn more about and learn how to solve. Now, certainly there are things you can do, management practices you can take, including improving your drainage, maybe getting some more tile in the ground, having better overall soil fertility. Planting the right variety, though, is one of the things that I wanted to get to when I start talking about that genetic side and one of the exact reasons why Darren spends so much time with seed breeders and trying to learn more about that side of things. Because here's where I'm going with this. Well, there are plenty of cultural practices that you can take. The variety that you plant has maybe an even bigger role in all that. In other words, there are some varieties, they may not have resistance to this disease, but they have a whole lot more natural tolerance to this disease. So what I'm trying to say here is, if you're concerned about this going forward, you want to make sure that you're planting the right stuff, okay? That is paramount. That is number one. In addition to that, you really want your seed company to have had good SDS trials, because otherwise they're going to come to you and say, oh yeah, we have this rated really good, and then you all of a sudden plant it the next year and have a bunch of SDS. I mean, that's no good. That's the one good thing that's kind of come out of some of these years where it has been pretty bad with sudden death syndrome. And I could say the same thing with just about any disease out there. I mean, look at this year. We had a lot more southern rust in corn. We had, in some areas of the country, a lot more stripe rust in wheat. You know, if you get these diseases in a bad way then on lots of acres, then eventually that does get over into the seed breeder plots and where they're making their comparisons. So the breeders themselves get to see, oh boy, this one isn't any good. Or, wow, that one is great, even in this heavy pressure disease environment. So those are the kind of things that Darren looks at and the reason why he's out there. All right, so before we get more into that sudden death syndrome, I just wanted to let you know about a couple of things too. On Monday, October 9th, it'll be 7 p.m. Central or 8 p.m. Eastern. And of course, that would be 6 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Pacific. So I realize that I just gave you four numbers and now you're totally confused. But anyway, you can look it up or we'll be talking about it more between now and then. But anyway, on October 9th, 7 p.m. Central, that's a Monday night, prime time, Darren and I are going to be doing a Rural America Live on RFD TV. Now, why are we doing that? You hopefully by now have already heard that there is going to be a float in the Rose Parade called Salute to Farmers, and that was actually the idea from Darren and me that we pitched the Rose Parade committee on, And I'm super excited about that. We're going to talk a lot about that, give you a view of what the float's going to look like, everything else on that Rural America Live. In addition to that, we'll be taking your phone calls, answering your questions, talking about anything agronomically you'd like to discuss with us, and just kind of talking about how the year's gone, how harvest is looking, all that type of stuff. So it'll be a lot of fun. If you'd like to join us, it's a live event, and it is going to be on RFD TV. So that's, again, Monday, October 9th. One more thing along those same kind of lines. The next RFD magazine that comes out, you'll see more about the Salute to Farmers float in the Rose Parade. You'll get more information about RFD TV's coverage of that. And Darren and I will be involved in that, too. We're super excited that we get the chance to help promote the value of the American farmer. And a lot of this really comes back to, you know, anymore. I was just talking to a bunch of agronomists this morning. And I said, guys and gals, when a non-farmer, when you say the word agriculture to a non-farmer, what immediately do you think is going through their head? And so right away, somebody goes, GMOs. Another person goes, poison. I'm like, well, I hope they don't think about poison in agriculture. But anyway, GMOs, absolutely. Pesticides, they think about food safety. They might even be thinking about water quality. I mean, all these kind of things. You know, as an industry, we talk about new genetics and technology and everything else. But you know, let's wipe all that stuff out. What's really at the core of American agricultural success or Canadian agricultural success, success for agriculture around the world? What's at the core of it? It's people. It's absolutely people. So that's the thing that we're trying to promote and we're trying to highlight, that we think in agriculture, we have some of the best people in the world, some of the hardest working people in the world. It's just amazing what farmers do every day. Yet how often as a farmer do people come up to you and say, wow, thanks. Thanks for what you do. Well, that's what we're trying to do here at Ag PhD, and we're trying to promote that among non-farmers around the country. All right, again, we're going to talk about sudden death syndrome in soybeans. Love to have you join us, 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
You don't settle. You're driven. You're committed. You're a farmer. And you are relentless. Mycogen Seeds is relentless too. We won't stop. We never settle. We don't back down. We work hard and we work smart to get to know you and your farm and make sure you get the right seed on the right acres. See for yourself at mycogen.com or talk to your local Mycogen Seeds dealer and let us prove our relentless dedication to you.
And now we have Jenny in the field talking with Farmer Dave.
Dave, this corn has some noticeable differences. Tell us what's going on here.
Well, I know AgriLiquid had helped me out a lot last year, but I've been using my old fertilizer program for a long time. So I decided to do a comparison, AgriLiquid versus a conventional program. So far, the differences are pretty obvious.
Looks clear to me.
Absolutely. AgriLiquid is going to take the championship here.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
On Ag PhD, we've been talking about agronomy for nearly 20 years now. The number one question besides agronomy we get each week is for help on grain marketing. That's why we've created Grain PhD. No, we're not able to tell you exactly when to hit the high in the market, but we will give you the education you need to feel just as knowledgeable about your grain decisions as you do your agronomy ones. Grain PhD is the best place to go for all your risk management and cash marketing needs. Just go to grainphd.com or call 844-GRAIN-01.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here live in the Morton studio. Today we're talking about sudden death syndrome in soybeans. If you'd like to talk about something else, you got any questions, anything going on in your farm, our phone number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. All right, first on the show today, we have Lynn Justinson with us. He is with Arista. Lynn, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing today, Brian?
Great. Okay, so this topic of sudden death syndrome, as soon as farmers or agronomists bring that up to you, what's the first thing that you're usually talking to them about?
Well, I think this is the stance, and the first thing I like to talk about is it's not any one thing, right? I think really what we have to look at is a systems approach, much like we do when we talk white mold, Brian.
Yep.
I think what we need to talk about is we need to start with things like fertility, soil compaction, planting conditions when we plant that. I think there's things we can do seed treatment-wise that can enhance that. I also think there's some things maybe in furrow, some things like that to help. And then there's some other things, you know, we can do, maybe later in season to help alleviate that. But I don't believe it's any one thing as a magic bullet with that. It's truly a systems approach just because of the way that particular disease affects us.
All right. So at Arista, what specifically do you have that could be of value to a farmer that's concerned about sudden death syndrome?
Okay, yeah, I think a couple of things in there that we're seeing some really unique results for. We launched, as you know, Brian, a new product, Tapera Plus, late this last year due to some registrations just getting finalized by states. And that is that's a fluoxystrobin, and it also has a bifenthrin component as well. And the reason why I bring that up in furrow is I think we're starting to see and starting to figure that puzzle out with SDS as we think about things like nematodes and things like that, and those early insects that can do some sucking or do some damage to the roots, and we look at those as opportunities or vectors at which we can see the SDS early initially infect that. And then I think the second thing we also look at too is a product Fortix, which has a suppression label of SDS. Again, kind of the trick with that thing is it's an early application. And we look at that early application, that's at R1, not at R3 when we typically run fungicides out, but in an R1 where we need to get all the way to the soil. We need to do some stuff with we're good with spraying the soil, and we want to get complete coverage on that plant. So we have a couple of options in there that help with that. And then our Rancona brand seed treatments also have some enhanced ability where we've shown some work with Iowa State where we can see some added benefit for early plant health just by using that as a seed treatment.
All right. I want to come back to what you said on the Fortix, because I thought that's interesting, mm-hmm. and I've never really heard that before about we want to get to the soil. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, so the unique chemistry with that is this. Both those that particular product has a 122-day half-life in the soil. And what that means is we would really like to get to the soil because we feel like if we're getting that spray application all the way to the soil, one, that gives that opportunity for that plant to readily pick up that fungicide and bring it and kind of protect it from the inside out. Two, it also allows us to have very complete coverage of the plant and doing our best to protect the plant from the SDS. Plus, if we're coming up through the roots and we're up through that, we're getting some activity that way. So we're just because of the way that those particular two molecules are built within Fortix, those particular molecules, we're okay with the soil. Soils doesn't, we aren't created inactive, somewhere in 10 to 14 days or so in the soil. We have a nice longevity and a nice long play within the soil.
All right. Any last things you want to leave us with today, Lynn, about sudden death syndrome?
Well, I think it's anything. I think as we get guys out now and as we get dried back up here, Brian, I think it's time to take that notebook with you or maybe your insights or whatever you're using to log where you see issues in fields. Now's the time to log, right? I mean, we're running through harvest and we're evaluating those things, I think this is the time to do that. We make those notes and we start building that plan. And maybe we don't have beans back here for a year, maybe two, right? But if we have beans back in 2 years and we remember those are fields that you can be a little more aggressive and maybe implement a plan where you've had SDS in the past and do things planning and moving forward. Nothing we can do much about it this year other than let's plan and let's make sure we have a good plan going in the next time we plant beans in that field.
We've been talking to Lynn Justinson with Arista. Lynn, thanks a lot for the time. That was great stuff. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you. Have a good day, Brian.
You too. Let's go next to Jeff Hausman. He is with Mycogen. Hey, Jeff, how's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Doing great. All right, so we've been talking about sudden death syndrome so far. And one of the comments Lynn made right at the end there was, hey, take your notebook with you, make notes, all that kind of stuff. But I think for a lot of guys at this time of the year, they go, well, how do I even know it's sudden death syndrome versus something else? What should a guy be looking for?
Well, that's a good question. You know, some of the things you need to kind of be aware of where those, you know, the field started seeing the symptoms early in the year. You know, that disease can be also confused with brown stem rot.
Yep.
So you need to do a little investigation out there and get out there in the field, but maybe just a little bit earlier and recognize where those issues were at. You know, one of the symptoms with SDS is when you go out in a field and you go to pull that soybean plant out of the ground, typically this time of year the roots are going to be fairly well rotted off and kind of pulled out of the ground pretty easily. And then secondly, I would advise guys to kind of slice that stem open and look in there and see what you're seeing in there for color. You know, brown stem rot, you get the vascular tissue that's going to turn brown, and it's very noticeable where sudden death's going to maybe give you that off-white, creamy, grayish color. So it's a pretty easy way to identify. So you need to really identify it and make sure you know which disease you're looking at so you can make strategies for the following year like we were talking about earlier.
Okay, so Jeff, you work for a seed company. How do you guys take a look at all these varieties and help the farmer identify, all right, if you've got a sudden death syndrome problem, this is really what you should be planting?
Yeah, so we're looking at varieties that have good resistance to SDS, and we do that in multiple ways. One of the ways that we do that, we have a greenhouse procedure that we can test some of our newer varieties on and get an idea of how they look like in a greenhouse and how they are resistant to SDS. And, you know, the other thing is just our breeders out in the field looking at those varieties as we're going through the testing and seeing if we can pick up some clues there on their resistance to SDS or their tolerance to SDS. And this gives us a good idea, and we combine those together to come up with a good idea of how that's going to work in the field. And we, you know, in my geography, I look for things that have very good resistance and tolerance to SDS. As it's getting widely spread throughout the, you know, almost the whole U.S. now is having some issues with SDS. It's become probably our number two soybean yield loss disease out there right now. So it's definitely become an issue that we need to address.
Well, I think, too, in the last 5 years, the companies like yourselves have done a lot better job getting us as farmers better varieties that will handle SDS. How do you feel about that?
I think we've done a very good job on that, is identifying those varieties that are good. And I think that's really the first key step in going after that SDS field or fields with a history of SDS. You know, and then there's a lot of other tools, seed treatments out there now. There's, you know, there's one out there right now, Olivo, has shown very good performance against SDS. So there's a lot of avenues. I kind of go with that variety selection, maybe looking at a seed treatment. And, you know, then there's some management things that you can look at also. You know, we know compaction has, you know, caused more prevalent SDS. Soils that are a little bit poorly drained have shown that prevalence of SDS also. So there's some things you can do there. Reduce your compaction. You can do some drainage, you know, with tile, things like that to help reduce that potential for SDS. The other thing, you got to make that management decision at planting time, making sure we're in nice warm soils. That forecast looks very good that we can get that soybean plant off to a good start. You know, it takes as little as 72 hours for SDS to get started in the seedling. So we really need to make some management decisions like that as we move forward.
Yep, couldn't agree more. Hey, Jeff, thanks a lot for the time today. Really appreciate it. Again, that was Jeff Hausman with Mycogen Seeds. Thanks, Jeff.
Yep, thank you.
You bet. All right, so we will continue talking about sudden death syndrome in soybeans. We're going to get to your questions coming up a little bit later in the Ag PhD mailbag. And if you want to call in, we do have open phone lines right now. It's 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
With generations of experience and a legacy of excellence in construction, Morton Buildings delivers fully customizable buildings for a variety of purposes.
And it wasn't just, this is what we build and this is what we have. They took our ideas and made our building.
It's a superior building. Of course, the warranty is fantastic, and it's all as a result of Morton's designs.
Don't miss your chance to build Morton. Contact your local Morton Buildings Construction Center or check us out anytime online at mortonbuildings.com.
What if you couldn't hear 70% of this commercial? You'd miss a saying that would understand talking about, which frustrating, to say the least. The same thing can happen to the nitrogen in the soil, where up to 70% of nitrogen loss occurs. Instinct and NSERF maximize your nitrogen application, so your corn will give you the max in return. Get the whole story at maxinmaxout.com.
Use it here. Here. Even here. From anywhere with any smart device, access Irrigation Mission Control. Rain Cloud from Rinke. Customize the dashboard to manage data, pivot functions, check soil moisture, and more for better decisions and smarter farming. From here, too. Visit myraincloud.com. That's myreincloud.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Let's take a look at our picks for the championship season. We've got 10-34-0.
No. I don't want to talk about them. I want to talk about this Agro Liquid team. Take a look at this lineup. They got it all. The talent, their players can meet any challenge on any field. The coaching staff, the best I've seen.
So that's your pick? No discussions?
Nope. Agro Liquid is the team. They're going all the way to the championship.
Are frog eye leaf spot and white mold hurting your soybean yield? Ondiamo 230 by Sipcam Rotam offers a reliable and cost-effective solution. With the active ingredient tetraconazole, Ondiamo mixes easily in a low volume of water and is compatible with other fungicides. It's a flexible addition to your fungicide program for soybeans. Learn more at SipcamRotam.com. Innovation and value for the new normal. SipcamRotam.com.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. We're talking about sudden death syndrome in soybeans. It's a terrible disease that seems to be spreading around the country. Trying to solve that problem. And to help us do that, we have brought in Melissa Chu. She is with Bayer. Melissa, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. All right. So what are you talking about at Bayer to try to help us farmers with sudden death syndrome?
Well, at Bayer, we have, you know, looking into the sudden death syndrome disease, we have been, you know, trying to help build education around the fact that this is actually a disease that starts in the soil. And so root rot infection takes place first, and SDS infects the roots. And just from that root rot infection, you can lose yield throughout the season. Later in the season, the toxin moves up the plant and can result in the foliar symptoms that we're familiar with seeing on the leaves of the plant. And obviously, when that happens, the yield loss can be even greater. Truly significant yield loss can happen at that stage.
All right. So when you talk about that, it sounds to me like you're saying that almost all of this root rot and where the SDS gets going is very early in the season. Is it possible that some of it can happen a little bit later, or are you finding that almost all of it is occurring really early? It's just that we unfortunately don't see the symptoms, or maybe fortunately, don't see the symptoms until maybe 2-3 months later.
Right. The initial infection happens early on in the season and creates root rot basically below ground. And that root rot continues throughout the season. And then really, depending on how the season progresses, you may or may not see foliar symptoms. But the root rot, SDS, you know, if you've got it in your field, the root rot infections can be there, is likely to be there underground, even if it's not a year where the foliar symptoms present.
Well, now, when you say when you say it's already in the soil, how long is it going to last in the soil? So if the guy says, uh-oh, I've had a bad problem, maybe I should just go corn a couple years and then I'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. It's really hard to get rid of SDS from the field. Even rotating to a crop like corn is still a host for SDS. So if you've got it in your field, most likely it's going to still be there.
Okay, so that's terrible news. So cheer us up a little bit. What are we going to do? What can we do to help alleviate this problem?
Right. So Bayer has a solution called Alevo, which is a seed treatment. And so when you have Alevo on your seeds, you will be protected against the fungus that causes SDS, really protecting you against that root rot infection right from the beginning of the season. And so by protecting against the root rot infection, you're going to be protecting yield from yield whether or not foliar symptoms show up. So you'll be protected against the below ground phase. And of course, if the, you know, if the season progresses in such a way that foliar symptoms do present, Alevo will be protecting against that as well. And really, it's a truly great solution because, you know, we do have varieties out there that have a level of SDS tolerance, and those target primarily, really, they target the foliar symptoms. And Alevo is a great complement to those varieties because it also targets the root rot infection below ground, and it's the only solution that can do that.
There are a couple different rates with Alevo. There's a lower rate and a higher rate. Can you kind of explain what each of those will do?
So we have a rate for SDS and nematodes, and we haven't talked yet about Alevo also being an excellent protection against nematodes. But at the SDS and nematode rate, you'll get protection against both SDS and nematodes. And then there's also a rate that targets specifically nematodes. So at the rate for nematodes specifically, it's a great nematicide compound, but you won't get the SDS protection. So if you're in an area where SDS has just not been a problem for you ever and you don't anticipate, you know, you haven't seen it in the area, but you do suspect nematodes in your field, then the nematode rate of Alevo can be a good choice. But if you're in an area where if you've seen SDS in the past, even if you haven't seen them last year, because as we talked about, it stays in the field, the SDS rate will be a better choice for those fields because you really never know whether the conditions during the season will end up resulting in foliar symptoms. So you're better off to be protected with the SDS rate in those fields because you'll protect yield from both the below ground impact as well as the above ground impact should the foliar symptoms appear.
And the other thing is, sadly, we see a lot of soybean cyst nematode and SDS in the same field, and when you have both problems, everything seems to be worse. So I know one of the things I've talked to some of your people about is putting Votivo together with Alevo. So you have like a double dose on the cyst nematode to really try to alleviate that problem and help out with the sudden death. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, pairing a solution like Pontra Votivo with Alevo can be a great solution for both SDS and nematodes. So Alevo, again, as we talked about, has activity against SDS and nematodes, and the Pontra Votivo, the Votivo component in there, it is a living bacteria that grows at the roots, providing additional protection against nematodes. So that would be a very strong solution to combat both of those threats.
We've been talking to Melissa Chu with Bayer. Melissa, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Let's go next over to the state of Minnesota. We have David Key on with us. He is with the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council. David, how are you?
Hey, Brian, I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, but we get a lot of phone calls from farmers every year saying, hey, I got sudden death syndrome. What should I do? What's this problem looking like over in the state of Minnesota?
This year it hasn't been as bad as in years gone by, but we had a dry spell back in July.
Yep.
And SDS is favored for a wet spell throughout the growing season. So we saw a little more of it last year than we did this year, and it depends upon where you are in the state. It's not appearing too much in the northwest corner, and as we go westward, it seems to be a little bit less because we did have a little longer dry spell back in July. As you already know it shows up mainly late July, early August as leaf foliar symptoms. But the problem started closer to planting. And it's the infection is favored by cool, wet conditions. And the earlier we plant, the more intense it gets. And it seems to hit us mainly in our high-producing fields.
All right. So since you're with the Soybean Research and Promotion Council, what's really your goal with this whole thing? Is it to just to get more information out? Are you concerned about on the other end of it where basically the grain quality isn't as good? I mean, where are you going with all this?
All of the above. basically, it's impactful beast. It's also confusing. We'll have people calling up and we'll have to go scout the fields. Is it SCS or is it brown stem rot?
Sure. Well,
foliar, they look the same. You split the root, split the stem, it's clear, white. SDS, if it's brown, brown stem rot, a little bit different management practices. You can practice better. You can get better reactions with your rotation program by going back to corn with brown stem rot.
Right.
SDS, if you go back to corn, you're not going to do any good. What we have found is if you go back to wheat or preferably alfalfa for a couple of years and have a 3 to 4 year rotation back to soybeans, much better rotation package, but you've got to get completely out of the vector. Those host plants, which include both corn and soybeans, and especially if you've got a high seed loss in your corn, that fusarium bacteria or fungus really lasts on the residual, and tillage helps, but it also spreads it around, so it's a double-edged sword. We are doing a little bit of research with the University of Minnesota, Catherine Bushley's, where she's looking at fungus control of SCN. There appears, you know, we're crossing our fingers that maybe there's some funguses that fight the fusarium from invading the roots, but that's not proven. It's just we're looking at kind of hoping something like that pops up. If it follow through with that research and see how it goes.
All right. Well, David, we are super interested in that research coming forward. So we really appreciate what you do and appreciate looking at this topic because it is something that guys are very concerned about. We've been talking with David Key. He is with the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council. David, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Brian. Y'all have a good day.
Yep, you too. Yeah, sudden death syndrome does, like we've been saying all day, does seem to be spreading around the country. There certainly is concern. If you rotate to corn, that's not going to solve your problem. Tillage may help a little bit, but like David was just saying there, that actually could spread it around a little bit more. So I'll get to a couple last points that I want to make on sudden death syndrome right after this, and then we'll get to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag. That's all coming up here on Ag PhD Radio.
One herbicide can seem like enough, but it can't do it all. Luckily, One Herbicide Portfolio can. Get the upper hand with BASF Advanced Weed Control. The most sites of action. Proven performance. Go to advancedweedcontrol.basf.us today to see what BASF can do for you.
Consult with your state regulatory agency regarding status of registration in your state. Always read and follow label directions.
Farmers value their independence. So does FMC. We understand the freedom to choose the best products for your fields is key to your operation's success. With the exclusive agronomic and economic incentives of the new FMC Freedom Pass program, you're free to choose your favorite seed and protect your crops all season long with proven FMC products. To learn more, visit fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass or contact your authorized retailer today. Always read and follow label directions.
Don't let resistant weeds cause problems in your corn. Partner up with a tank mix of Impact Herbicide and Roundup WeatherMax or PowerMax Herbicide. Now that's an all-star team for overall control of resistant weeds, including water hemp, kochia, Palmer amaranth, and mare's tail. And because Impact Herbicide is the only post-emergence partner in the Roundup Ready Plus corn program, that's a team that earns you an incentive of up to $3.50 per acre. Get the resistant weed control program that pays. Ask your AmVac sales rep about Impact Herbicide. Always read and follow label directions.
You don't settle. You're driven. You're committed. You're a farmer. And you are relentless. Mycogen Seeds is relentless too. We won't stop. We never settle. We don't back down. We work hard and we work smart to get to know you and your farm and make sure you get the right seed on the right acres. See for yourself at Mycogen.com or talk to your local Mycogen Seeds dealer and let us prove our relentless dedication to you.
Increase your yield potential by putting the power of nature to work. Quick Roots Microbial Seed Inoculant helps improve the availability and uptake of key nutrients like N, P, and K, which are critical for a healthy crop. Quick Roots technology is available for a variety of crops in an easy-to-apply formulation. Simply mix it into your dry planter box and your seeds will be covered. Learn more at MonsantoBioAg.com/QuickRoots.
What is the Corvus Zone? It's the one place broadleaf weeds and grasses don't stand a chance. Corvus is the only corn herbicide that delivers three levels of defense against broadleaf weeds and grasses, including resistant weeds. Burn down takes out early weeds, residual prevents new weeds, and reactivation with rain gets late weeds. Want to keep it weed-free all season? Welcome to the Corvus Zone. Corvus, the number one pre-emergence corn herbicide from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Just to wrap up on sudden death syndrome today, again, terrible disease plaguing soybean fields around the country. First thing that we're going to talk to you about is tile. You've got to improve your drainage. If you have a sudden death syndrome issue, that tells me right away you have wet soil. Now, it might not always be because you need more tile, but in many cases it is. Next thing is reduce soil compaction. So do what you can to control traffic. Maybe, you know, just even as we go into harvest here, trying to stay out of the wet fields, give it a little more time. And believe me, I know how tough this is, because if you think you push on your farm, just imagine for me and all the stuff we have going on, the acres we're running over, I'm pushing our guys hard. So I want to be out there the second we possibly can. In fact, I was just talking to our farm manager and our research guy at Ag PhD. I mean, they got totally separate things they're working on. Talked to both of them this morning. Are you ready? Are you ready? Because literally the second you can possibly go, we're there. So I know it's tough sometimes when I say reduce soil compaction, but everything you can do toward that, you know, along those lines, that is absolutely going to help reduce sudden death syndrome. Next thing, we talked about it quite a bit today, pick a more tolerant seed variety. Talk to your seed provider and make sure you're finding stuff, if you're concerned about this, that will handle sudden death syndrome better. We also talked about Olivo today. It's a good seed treatment. That's really the best thing on the market. Now, with Syngenta, they will talk to you about Clariva Complete and adding Mirtec to it. You can do that. The Mirtec has a little bit of activity. Clariva Complete is going to have activity mainly because a lot of times when you find sudden death syndrome, we also find soybean cyst nematode. Clariva Complete's really there for the soybean cyst nematode, and the complete part of it, Clariva Complete, is to help you out on other stuff. So, in other words, other diseases. If you've got fewer diseases attacking the plant, then obviously it should be more tolerant to a disease like sudden death syndrome if it does happen to hit. We also talked today about applying Fortix. There's also Preemptor. That's basically the same thing that you could spray at R1. You want to spray early. Okay, just make sure you're spraying early. So we would tell you Fortix at R1 at about 5 ounces. It's going to cost you roughly probably $10 or $11, something like that. So yes, it costs some money, but it's not that crazy expensive. We have a lot of farmers around the country who are using cover crops. Our suggestion for cover crops would be rye, oats, brassica species. Those types of things actually have been shown to help reduce sudden death syndrome in the future. So you've got to try to find something, some type of mix out there that is not going to promote or continue to support the growth of sudden death syndrome. Rye, oats, brassica cover crops would be a good choice. And then finally, our suggestion to you is always plant your non-SDS and your tolerant varieties first. Plant your fields you're concerned about with sudden death syndrome and the more susceptible varieties last, but don't delay planting. If you delay planting, well, now you know you're going to have yield loss. You never know from one year to the next how much sudden death syndrome you're going to have. But we do know that when we delay planting on average, because again, I mean, every year is different. Don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying, look at all the studies ever done. earlier planting on average beats late planting. So there's some guys that I've talked to that say, oh, I heard that I can just reduce my sudden death syndrome incidence by delaying planting for a month or so. Well, you can, but now you've also cut your yield potential too. We really don't want you to have to cut your yield potential. That doesn't seem like a great paying proposition. So anyway, those are my tips for sudden death syndrome. Hopefully, again, you don't have the problem on your farm, but if you do, those are the steps I would take to reduce the issue of sudden death syndrome. All right, well, it's time now to get to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
Or just Brian today. Okay, so first question comes from Ohio. It's Dave. He says, hi, guys, I have a farmer growing barley. He's planting it into a soybean stubble field, which had heavy grass or foxtail pressure this past season. Is there anything to use in the fall as a pre-emerge or in the spring post-emerge for grass? Okay, so Dave, we don't have as many options as we have in wheat. If it was wheat, for example, you know, we could use prepare pre-emerge, and I really like that. Post-emerge, whether it's wheat or barley, like you say in this case, for barley, you can go out there with Axial. It's very good. Our suggestion for you, though, is this fall, we just want to try to prevent foxtail from going to seed. That's really our concern, because keep in mind, foxtail is just an annual weed. But in the state of Ohio, you probably have another couple of months that foxtail could grow. So if necessary, I'd be going out there hitting it with some Roundup, some glyphosate. Now, it doesn't take a lot of glyphosate, maybe even a half rate, three-quarter rate, depending on the size of your grass and the air temperature and how actively growing these weeds are. But I'm just trying to say it doesn't take, you know, 44 ounces like it might for some of these other weeds. It probably takes 16 ounces of Power Max. You know, I mean, that's a three-quarter rate. That at the most, that's what it's going to take most likely. So I'm just trying to say you can spend a couple bucks. You might have to do that once or twice in the fall. Just get it burned down. Make sure nothing goes to seed. And then if you seed early enough in the spring, it'll be before the foxtail comes up most likely. And then post-emerge, try to hit the grass when it's small with Axial. That would be my best suggestion. All right. Yesterday I was commenting on some of the comments we get off YouTube. It seems like every day there's something where it's obviously a non-farmer that's got some concern about agriculture. Today, I believe this is a farmer, and he said, every week I watch this show hoping I might be taught something useful, but when soil sampling rented land is pointless because it can be lost. I think he's trying to say that must not be useful. Anyway, here's my point. We don't talk about how soil sampling rented land is pointless. It's not pointless. We want you to soil sample rented land. So occasionally I get emails and I go, man, did I not make myself clear enough on what we talk about? So I will make it clear. We want you to soil test every field every year. Okay, now you don't have to do that. Yeah, I mean, but at least you should be soil testing every 2-3 years. So you have an idea what's going on. I don't care if it's rented ground or not rented ground. The point is, if you don't have a soil test, how do you know how to fertilize? How does anybody know how to make a fertilizer recommendation to you? They don't. They're guessing. Well, I mean, your guess is probably better than anybody else's. But still, a guess is a guess. Why would we want to be guessing when we could have actual data to make better decisions with? Soil testing is inexpensive. Yeah, it takes a little bit of work, but it's not like it's that much work. So I just really encourage you, get some soil testing done all the time. I don't care if it's rented ground or not rented ground. All right, our next question comes from Jordan in Indiana, who says, hi, guys, I'm looking to get your opinion on a soybean herbicide program for next year. This year, control was so-so, and we have some fields that are 100% clean and others not so much. We've had a lot of rain in the spring. Some fields since have had close to 36 inches of rain. So as you can imagine, we've got some issues out there. Problem weeds, water hemp, giant ragweed, mare's tail, and this is no-till, by the way. And I also, let's see, he's also got information here. His cation exchange capacity ranges from 7, which is very light soil, all the way to 30, which is very heavy soil. But roughly, we're at about 17 average cation exchange capacity across all farms. And the organic matter is about 3.3. And this is in central Indiana. Okay, so Jordan, here's the first thing that I'm going to look at. When I don't care if we're talking no-till, strip-till, conventional till, when we talk about those weeds, they are tough weeds. All right, water hemp, giant ragweed, mare's tail. We talk all the time here on Ag PhD about the 3-pre program, and this is exactly what I would say for you in soybeans. So I want a yellow out there. If it's no-till, then that means, unfortunately, you're going to have to use Prowl. Prowl's a lot more expensive than trifluralin, but that's what you have to use. In addition to that, I would go with some metribuzin. And the reason why I was curious about your cation exchange capacity, if it's very sandy ground, I'm really careful about that. If your soil pH, as long as your soil pH is below 7, you're probably okay at a third of a pound, but in those sand spots, you'd want to reduce that, maybe even half rate or something like that, sixth of a pound, eighth of a pound, something like that, just to make sure you're safe. Okay, then the third thing is use either Authority or Valor. Use a decent rate of either Authority or Valor. That's absolutely what I would do. Now, when we want to talk about burn down in the spring, what's going to be able to burn all those down? Well, number one, I would prefer Extend, and I'd throw Dicamba in. And Jordan does say in here he likes Liberty. I don't have any problem. You can go Liberty and burn down with Liberty as well. It's just Liberty is more expensive. So you want to make sure you have good active growth and use small droplets. Get yourself good coverage. That's what I would do for a pre-emerge herbicide program. Well, stay tuned. We'll get to more of your questions right after this in the Ag PhD mailbag time.
You know our names. Ultrablazer, Surflan, Topson, Manzate, Aseo. But do you know us? We are UPI, a worldwide leader in crop protection. And we are quietly leading the way. We are developing and improving products that meet your ever-changing needs. Today, we offer more than 90 herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, and fumigants that provide the widest range of protection in agricultural, aquatics, turf, ornamental, and pest control markets. And we're building for the future, too. In fact, we've built 29 manufacturing facilities worldwide to ensure you always have the products you need. At UPI, we spend our time thinking about the things you think about, protecting your livelihood and reaping a bountiful crop. So let's get to know each other. Visit us at upi-usa.com today.
In today's market, growers deserve products that bring true, measurable value to their farm. My name is Wade Barnes, and I am the co-founder and CEO of Farmer's Edge. My passion has been to build a company that makes great products that creates value for farmers. When value is clear, decisions become easy. At Farmer's Edge, we believe the only way to understand value is to experience it yourself. I want to give every farmer the opportunity to experience the value of their data. Try our integrated data solution with no commitments till May 1st, 2018. Farmer's Edge will install cam plugs in every piece of equipment and weather stations on every farm. We'll give you access to our farm management platform, Farm Command. Experience the value of having accurate, field-centric data at your fingertips. I know we can make a difference on your farm. Your data is your asset. Own it and use it. Visit us at smartfarmers.com and sign up today. That's smartfarmers.com.
What's the quickest way to ruin a nice summer day? Seeing glyphosate-resistant volunteer corn get past your defenses and show up in your fields. It's more than a nuisance, and it'll cause yield loss if you don't take care of it soon. So how do you cover the gap between glyphosate and a resistant weed like volunteer corn? With the fast-acting post-emergence control of SelectMax herbicide with Inside technology. SelectMax has a unique formulation that delivers powerful performance and excellent crop safety. It's the fastest clethodim product in the market, so you can fight back against volunteer corn immediately. No matter what weed threat you're facing, the best solution is a diversified management program to cover the gap and stop resistant weeds. Valent USA Corporation has several fast-acting, broad-spectrum post-emergence control solutions, including SelectMax, Cobra Herbicide, and Resource Herbicide. Talk with your retailer today to find out which one is right for your field, and visit valent.com/coverthegap for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. Brian Hefty here live in the Morton studio, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time. Right before the break, we were talking about Jordan's question from out in Indiana. There's one last thing that I needed to get to yet. He just made the comment in here. He actually is going to go all extend beans next year, but he's concerned because he's got a few homeowner gardens nearby, so he doesn't want to use a whole lot of Extendamax post, or Ingenia for that matter. Jordan, I totally get it. You got to be really concerned with dicamba, but you know what? You have to be concerned with all pesticides. We don't want off-target movement. So one of the tips that I got this year from a farmer down in Arkansas who told me he's had zero problems, even in the state of Arkansas, where they had the most complaints in the whole country, it seems like. Anyway, he just told me, Brian, I figured this thing out. He goes, all I do is look at the weather today, and I look at the wind direction also tomorrow. So he said, if the wind's going to switch direction and tomorrow it's going to be blowing toward a sensitive crop, I don't spray. And he said, I know that cuts down the number of days I can spray, but he said, let's face it, in a lot of cases, I own the ground around it, or my neighbor does, and it's corn or it's extend beans, so I'm not concerned about it. I only have a few cases, just like Jordan's talking about here, where he's got gardens nearby or something. Well, that's where you really have to pay attention to today's wind and tomorrow's wind. So that's the number one piece of advice I would give you. I expect we're going to see some label changes on Extendamax and Ingenia going into next year, but we're not only trying to prevent drift, we're also trying to prevent volatility, okay? And volatility is what can happen to you the next day. So typically after 24 hours, you're usually pretty safe. I would just tell you to reduce the chance of volatility. You want to spray during the day as opposed to in the evening when humidity's high and dew starts to set in. That will really help as well. All right, next one comes from Chet in Montana. He says, Brian, do acid-based 2,4-Ds control weeds better versus amine-based 2,4-Ds when mixed with glyphosate? Growers are telling me that's what's being recommended. Well, first of all, you have to be careful with what type of glyphosate we're talking about. If you talk about the K-salt, you can't just put anything in there. So you have to be real concerned about what kind of 2,4-D it is. So watch that, check that, jar test that, do that type of thing. Now, if we're just strictly going to talk 2,4-D, there is old LV6, the oil-based, there is the salt-based amine, and then there now is the new choline base, and that is Freelix. Okay, what am I using anymore? If I can, and we haven't even done the tests with this together with glyphosate, but if I can, and if it'll mix, I'm absolutely using Freelix because it has virtually no volatility and way less drift properties. So we've been using it right on our field day site where we have all these different crops in a relatively small area. You know, we got about 40 acres of plots and everything else here on the Ag PhD field day site. It's been amazing. 3 years in a row, had absolutely no movement. I cannot say the same thing for the dicamba products, but I can for this. So Freelix is really all I'm talking about anymore. I'd just as soon never talk to another guy about LV6 or 2,4-D amine. That's 50-year-old technology. I'm going with the new technology where we have a lot fewer problems. All right. Let's see. Next question is from Brad, who writes in, hey, I'm looking at brace roots right now and their height above ground. Can I use this space to determine planting depth? No, Brad, you can't. You're really going to have to dig that plant up and find out how deep that seed was planted. But you can find, in a lot of cases, even right now, we're digging around our farm and other people's farms around the country right now, and we can go there and find out how deep that seed is placed, because the seed with corn stays exactly where it's put. So that's a great thing. It's real easy. Even here we are, many, many months after planting, we can see how good a job that guy did with the planter because we can see exactly where that depth was. But yeah, you're not going to be able to tell that from above ground. It has nothing to do with how far apart the brace roots are spaced or anything like that. You really have to do digging around to see where that seed was planted. Next question is from Bill in Central Tennessee. He says, hi guys, I've grown tobacco in the past and I want to move to West Tennessee and start growing continuous corn. I heard there's a license with Monsanto. How does that work exactly? Well, Bill, in terms of that license, there's really nothing much to it. If it's a Monsanto trait, you just have to sign a license agreement. No real big deal. What about the government? Do you have to have a base like tobacco? No, you do not have to have a base. You can buy any piece of property in the United States, as far as I know, and raise corn on it. But obviously, there are certainly local regulations and that type of thing, so you just have to check where you're going. I'm not sure how. I'm jumping around here on Bill's email. He says, he goes, I've been watching your show religiously every morning from 4 a.m. till about 6 a.m., and I've been taking notebooks full of notes from the show. It's helped me a lot, and I look forward to the shows to come. Thanks for what you do. I look forward to hearing from you. The last thing he says in here is he just was trying to find all this stuff out about before he ends up investing into ground in another part of the state. Yeah, that's always a challenge. I'll tell you, Bill, my dad, he was a farmer originally in Iowa and came out to South Dakota after he married my mom, who was originally from here. It was 200 miles away from where he had ever farmed before. So it's scary. You absolutely want to do your research. He had an advantage because he had relatives then, you know, relatives-in-law, that he could at least ask advice from and that type of thing. But yeah, you absolutely want to do your homework before you're moving somewhere else and farming. All right, next one is from Mark in Maryland. He sent us some pictures too, and he said, hey guys, I just am following up again on this twice-planted cornfield. I've talked to you a couple of times about it this year. I just wanted to send you now some pictures of some of these ears. And just to describe this a little bit, what Mark is saying here, or what he's showing here is, and what happened, just to step back a minute, what happened last spring is it was a guy that he was working with, I think. I don't think it was his farm, but I'm not sure. Maybe it was his farm. Anyway, it was planted, and then he said, oh, stands bad, whatever. Something bad happened to it, and I want to go replant. Well, they didn't get the first stand completely killed. So the first stand ended up coming, and then the second stand also came at full population. So as you can imagine, that was not real good. And anyway, the whole point is, and what he's showing me here in these pictures is it's like every other ear, one's fantastic, next one, horrible, a few kernels on it. Yeah, this is exactly what we talk about, Mark, when, you know, we want a nice, even stand all throughout the field. The better you can do that, then the better chance we have for high yields. So I think that's, I'm glad you tracked it all the way through so you can really see, boy, we want to make sure this does not happen again. All right, next question is from Sandy up in Ontario, Canada, who says, hi, I'm reading the Neil Kinsey book, Hands-On Agronomy, and they comment in here about trying to raise potassium levels, because mine are only 2, but trying to raise those potassium levels to, let's say, over 4%. How am I going to do that if I have some high pH soil? Because I do have some that is over 7 for pH. And it says right in this book that only manure or plant residue will raise potassium when it's at this pH. What are your thoughts on raising base saturation K with chemical fertilizer at a pH of 7? Well, Sandy, I will just tell you that we have gone through this ourselves. And by the way, Neil Kinsey, if for any of our listeners today, if you've not read his book, Hands-On Agronomy, I'll tell you right now, best agronomy book I've ever read. Buy it, read it, learn it. It's awesome. Okay, now, when he talks about that, we've had Neil Kinsey here several times doing training with us, working with us too, because I'm trying to glean as much knowledge as I can from him. He's one of the top soils guys in the whole world. Anyway, I talked to him about this specifically because I said, Neil, I'm not finding what you have found over your career. Why am I increasing my base saturation K levels with potash, even though I've got some soil pH above 7? Why is that? And he goes, well, I mean, just let me ask you this. He said, are you trying to lower the pH? And are you taking steps to lower the pH? And I said, absolutely. I am lowering the pH. That's happening. No question about it. And he said, well, there you go. So his whole point is, with your soil colloid and everything, you're just not able to hold all that potassium on there. It just doesn't seem to increase the levels when you've got the higher pH, unless at the same time you are working on lowering the pH. Okay, so if you're doing, if you're taking no other steps in your field, and all you're literally doing, all you're changing is throwing some potash out there, yes, you may have some problems, and manure may be the best way for you to go. But if you are taking some steps, like let's say you're using some elemental sulfur, you are improving drainage, whatever. I mean, there's some other things you can do too to help reduce that pH. If you're taking some of those steps, you absolutely can raise your base saturation K with potash or other commercial fertilizer, as long as, again, you are taking those steps. So, Sandy, you can certainly do that. Otherwise, we're always big proponents of manure as well if you have access to that. All right, well, we hope you've enjoyed the show today. Before we go, I just want to say thanks to our production staff, thanks to our guests, and thanks to all who wrote in with questions. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.